routes. You have been listening to Calls from Home, a call-in program that shares prisoners' families sending greetings to their loved ones. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the country, bringing you local radio productions of national interest. Sprouts is distributed and coordinated by Pacifica Radio Network. Thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts to showcase it nationally, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. I'm Amelia Kirby in Whitesburg, Kentucky. See you next week on Sprouts.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris, and coming up next, yes, it's Bathrobe Spears Broadsides, the December 20th, 2007 edition. Stay tuned.
I love you, I always get that Mona Lisa smile. Not sure if you believe me, or if your heart is somewhere running wild. Some things lose their meaning, while others gain in value over time. If nothing is forever, I'd settle for that Mona Lisa smile. Oh, if nothing lasts forever, I'd settle for your Mona Lisa smile. You seem so distant. Are you thinking about the lovers of your past? If I could be your artist, I'd paint a world where laughter fills your glass. Yesterday would be undone, tomorrow could erase the days gone by. Oh, if nothing is forever, I'd settle for that Mona Lisa smile. Oh, if nothing lasts forever, I'd settle for your Mona Lisa smile. Hands of time are melting, we're propping up the future with a sigh. The easel's standing empty, the colors on our palettes have run dry. Yet I see a vision beyond that hint of sorrow in your eyes. Oh, if nothing is forever, I'd settle for that Mona Lisa smile. Oh, 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 give us a smile, Mona Lisa. Give us a smile, Mona Lisa. Come on and smile, Mona Lisa. Come on and smile, couldn't last forever, I'd send for your Mona Lisa smile.
That was Mona Lisa Smile, another number from Mike True's CD. Perhaps the, I don't think it was the historic CD that had him busted by Sergeant Butchie Baker, from which he won, what was it, $5,000, $10,000 because of the settlement that the Santa Cruz City Attorney's Office and the police department made for this false arrest by Baker, another false arrest by Sergeant Baker, because you're allowed to display your own artwork. You're allowed to display your own music. Although, again, it's hard to say for all you musicians out there maybe looking for some guidelines as to how to proceed and what kind of protections you have. Some interesting articles for on street performers, by the way, for those of you who want to get a regular email service, resist@best.com is an interesting email address to go to, resist@best.com. If you send them an email, they'll put you on their email list, and you can get stories about street performers in different places. Interesting stuff, as I said. And maybe I can read you one of the stories, and I probably will later in the show. I'm going to begin, though, with a couple of street interviews. We're kind of amassing tickets for the Sleeping Band lawsuit, our Santa Cruz attempt to do what was successfully done in Los Angeles and San Diego, which is to overturn their local sleeping ban ordinances. Actually, in San Diego, it was the statewide 647J enforcement that was overthrown, actually a more impressive success than in Los Angeles, which actually got more media publicity. The Jones decision in Los Angeles, which I've talked about, which more recently became the Jones settlement, prohibits the police from enforcing a particular code, city code, which forbids you from sitting, sleeping, or lying on any public sidewalk under a settlement because of the fact that there's no meaningful homeless shelter for the overwhelming majority of homeless people. In fact, no homeless shelter, period, for the 30 to 80,000 homeless people in Los Angeles. I think they got a couple thousand bed places total at most. There was a settlement made that homeless people would be allowed to sleep at night between the hours of 9 and 6 if they were 10 feet from a building until such time as, I think, 1,200 units of supportive housing were built. Why such a small number? Go talk to the ACLU down there, which initially I gave a pat on the back to. Now I'll give them a kick in the boot or a boot in the backside for, because they essentially, according to activists, sold out the local folks without talking to either homeless activists or the homeless plaintiffs in the case, the Jones case. They also, for us, other folks elsewhere in California, and indeed elsewhere in the nine states covered by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, they removed the Jones precedent. So we can't say, see, you have to do this, Santa Cruz, because there's not a Supreme Court, but a Court of Appeals, Federal Court of Appeals decision that covers this entire Ninth Circuit. Now that decision has been vacated and depublished, and we have to begin again. But indeed, the decision is not gone from memory and has had an impact, so that there is the very significant possibility that once our lawsuit here in Santa Cruz is filed, City Attorney John Barisone and Mayor Ryan Coonerty may decide they want to change their law, as Richmond did, which makes ticketing people contingent upon there being real shelter space for people and a real option to get there. We have the disingenuous statements by Ed Porter last year and Ryan Coonerty and Mike Rotkin that somehow if you don't have a shelter, if it's okay what we do with our sleeping ban, which is no sleeping 11 to 8:30 in the morning and no covering up with blankets on any public property, even though there's space tonight for less than 150 or less than 160 people, about 160 actually, out of the 1,500 to 2,000 homeless out there. Because if they get a ticket and the armory is full, then the city attorney will dismiss the tickets. That still means that homeless people are going to be woken up. They're going to be arrested, because when you get a citation, you are, in fact, arrested, even though you may not be taken to jail or even taken to the police station or even handcuffed, but you are not allowed to move. That's called a custodial arrest. During such a circumstance, you can be searched even without your consent, although I encourage people to say, I do not consent to a search. And so people are subject to a whole series of indignities and violations of their privacy, and then abusive behavior by the police move on, although there's no place for you to move to, because of the law that we have in place that makes it criminal for people to do what they need to do at night. I'm going to be talking about this, and in fact the first interview is about that lawsuit. An individual, Mr. French, I think his name is, wants to become a plaintiff, and we talk about that on the San Lorenzo Footbridge.
Well, I'm on the footbridge over the San Lorenzo. It's about 20 to 12 on Wednesday, the 12th of December, 2007, talking with
Mr. French.
And Mr. French, you look like you got your life with you in a white sack there, and you say you got a sleeping ticket last night?
Yes, I did, by a young cop.
And what happened?
Well, I was just sleeping there, minding my own business, and this cop came up and said, if I could fine you with my card, then you'd get a ticket.
If he could fine... Say that again.
If he can fine me with his car... That means he drives around, and if he can spot you with his car, mm-hmm. then he'll give me a ticket. But if he went behind a building where I didn't think cops would usually go, and he got me with his car, so he seen me, he gave me a ticket.
Where exactly, if I can ask you, did you get the ticket?
Around Goodwill area.
And were you visible from the street?
No, I wasn't.
So you were visible from the alley, I guess.
No, you had to go into the alley.
You had to go into the alley. So is there a place a car could go?
Yeah, there's a place a car can go.
So, did anybody else get a ticket for sleeping?
No, sir. I guess you already run them off.
Okay. And is this your first such citation, or have you had others?
I usually get one every 10 years if I run across a jerk cop.
So this is your first ticket in 10 years?
10 to 15 years, yes.
And what did the officer say to you? Anything else other than that car stuff about seeing you from a car?
He said that I can probably have it taken care of through HPHC. There's this homeless community center down here,
uh-huh.
and if the shelter's full, then they usually drop the charges. And he said last night they were probably full, but he gave me a ticket anyways.
Did he actually use those words, or did you think the shelter was full because of your own information?
No, he used his own words.
So he said the shelter's probably full, but I'm giving you a ticket anyway.
That's right.
Why, because he thought you were too visible? Is that his idea?
No, I think he was just a young cop. Don't know no better.
Huh. And he was alone, only one police officer?
No, there was another guy with him, but he wasn't dressed in a uniform.
And what did he say?
He didn't say a word. He would just watch it over him.
So it looked like he was being trained to do this? You were being used as a training exercise?
Or just looking around, looky-loo. I don't really know what his job was. He didn't say a word. He just jumped out with a flashlight, too.
About what time was this?
Exactly, 2 o'clock in the morning.
And what did you do afterward?
I went to the center of the river and made a camp.
And did you set up a tent, chop down a tree, take a shit on the ground? When you say set up a tent, what do you mean?
Oh, none of that. I just threw a blanket down on the ground for ground cover and threw a sleeping bag on top of it.
How cold was it last night?
To me, it wasn't that cold.
Uh-huh.
But I got a good sleeping bag.
Okay. And how long have you been homeless?
Off and on for 30 years here in Santa Cruz.
Any thoughts about how things are now as compared with, say, 5 or 10 years ago?
Well, I don't like the idea of putting those rails up on the mall to keep people from sitting. That's just way out of line. I wasn't seeing that one coming.
Uh-huh.
I took a 5-year vacation. I came back to that. But in 89 or before 89, we had the whole mall, and that was real nice being out there on the mall back then, back in 1989. But now there's just there's nowhere to sit. Now no one can sit down there. Not even people that don't live on the street. So it messes everything up. It makes it look ugly, too.
You know that activists like me have been talking about the sleeping ban for a couple of decades now. You see any of the protests that homeless people have done? Have you been around for those?
No, I missed out on all those.
Again, we're talking with...
Kevin French.
And Kevin, of course, you know, the cop is probably giving you correct advice on the citation, although apparently they're not writing letters from the Homeless Service Center anymore because the armory is open. And the city attorney is supposed to be dismissing these tickets. Of course, I don't know if he's going to tell you he's dismissing these tickets. That remains to be seen. How much time and trouble was it to move your camp from where it was to San Lorenzo?
No trouble, really. Just had to get up in the middle of the night and move it, grab a bag that weighed probably about 20 pounds and move it from one end of town to the next.
Now, were you sleeping in a spot on the first occasion when you were ticketed where people, you know, where you would normally be sleeping? I mean, is that the kind of place you were sleeping for the last few nights?
That's my first night there.
And before that, where were you sleeping? More or less.
On the other side of town.
And was it more concealed? Or?
Yeah, my other places were more concealed. I was out in the open this time. But I heard from a friend that it was at a good spot. But I guess it wasn't.
Apparently your friend was mistaken.
Unless he got a ticket himself the day before, because I didn't see him that night. I was expecting to see him there, but he wasn't there. So he must have got run out the night before. I was thinking they'd give me a warning ticket, if anything else. This guy just straight gave me a ticket.
So he didn't offer you a place to stay?
No.
He didn't offer to take you to the armory?
Nope.
Didn't offer to take you to a church?
Nope.
He just gave you a $97 ticket?
I guess that's what they go for, huh? You know,
that's the bail, yeah.
He ain't not going to get it out of me.
Well, you think this the law should be overturned by a lawsuit, and you're interested in being part of this lawsuit?
Yes, I am.
And that's why this guy is going to ask you a bunch of other questions. So I'm here at Elm Street at the line about 5:20 on Wednesday evening, the 12th of December. I'm talking with a San Diego guy.
Patrick Zettner.
Patrick? And Patrick, you say that last year in San Diego you had a homeless coalition that fought the sleeping ban in San Diego?
And we broke them down.
That's what
using the decision that they had made.
Jones
in LA.
Decision?
The Jones decision, yes.
So what happened? What's the current status in San Diego? Is it legal to sleep only at night? Is it legal to sleep only?
It's from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Then you can be there.
I mean, 6 p.m. to 6 a.m.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, you're correct. Yeah.
So is that anywhere in the city? Is it on the sidewalk?
That's on any public properties, parks and everything. You can't have any defecation or urination or littering or any of the stuff. Just show your respect. You know, keep it clean. Just stay away from the stuff that cops usually bother us for anyway. And that's how we did it.
All right.
And we went from 280 people that were at the tent, which we, by the way, we got the tent open year-round now.
What is the tent?
The tent is down by in the barrio, Barrio Logan. And what it is a place for homeless people, men and women, that they can go to. And you sign in and you get to stay there for the duration. You get assigned a chore or a duty, and you usually work with the Alpha Project.
And is this a city-run deal or a homeless-run deal?
This is a homeless-run deal. We actually run it. We had 12 council members started out, but we've expanded that.
When was it started? You know?
This was started in, that would be December of 2005 was when it started moving.
Did you say this expanded as a consequence of your action?
Yeah, of our action.
How did it expand?
So what we did was we organized informational seminars using pizza as bait.
Aha! Trapping the homeless with pizza.
We'd have a Thursday night meeting at 4 o'clock. And it was pizza night, and they would come in and get all the pizzas that they wanted. The boss man would go to Costco, and he was the head of Alpha.
Larry Milligan?
Wait a minute, I got his card.
Yeah. Whipping out your wallet here, huh?
And yes, and he was instrumental. As a matter of fact, he spearheaded it on his own. We went to the city council. Some of us cleaned up and represented. Those of us were articulate enough, you know, had enough.
Had it together.
Yeah, had it together enough to be able to speak to him. Speaking of my tickets, there's a bunch of them right here.
Recent tickets in Santa Cruz or tickets?
Santa Cruz, all open containers.
You drunken slut.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's what
I'm talking about. For drunkenness or for having an open container?
No, for open container.
Open container.
For simply being.
You know, you're not supposed to drink beer unless you're over 65, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Yes. Okay.
I'm trying to find my Alpha card. My brother?
So while you're looking for that card, Patrick, let me ask you, when did you leave San Diego? I mean, how long have you been up here?
I left September 31st of last year.
So you've been gone for about a year and more than a year.
A little more than a year.
And have you gotten any reports as to how the settlement is working?
Last I heard, it's doing fine. As a matter of fact, it's moving to burbs around Pacific Beach, Mission Beach, La Jolla, places where they habitually discriminate against homeless. You used to be able to get nailed down there just for having a backpack on your back.
And now?
They can't do that anymore.
So
I see one of these cards. I'm trying to find it. Here it is.
You're looking at a red card in your wallet, or is that another color?
It's the little red card here.
It is a little red card. Okay.
They have a backpack law. They had a backpack law down there.
Or a backpack policy, perhaps.
Wrong side?
Trying to pull out a card here. What does that card say? You want to read it to us?
It's a membership card. It's really hard for me to see here. It's the San Diego Homeless Coalition is committed to providing San Diego's homeless with men, women, and children with interconnected support and. I can't read because of the light.
Yeah.
And it's kind of beat up. And to providing San Diegans with homeless with a unified voice to reform a public policy and advise for those effective change to the system that is organized the neediest members of our community.
Thanks. You got everything, man. We have a man next to him who's pulled out a flashlight to throw a little light on the subject after the glasses he was offering. So what happened? What have you heard recently from San Diego Muslims?
Last time I talked to Dave.
Dave being
Nelson. He's the he was one of the spearheaders. He was a homeless guy.
When did you talk to him?
And I talked to him in June, and we had finally gotten clearance to have the tent open year round, and plus they're getting a permanent structure. They're putting up now. It's a military type, big, huge tent, like a circus tent.
Right.
And they're putting another one up.
Is this a shelter or an office?
They feed two meals there a day.
Yeah.
Sunday we have church services there. You can network and hook up with all the services that are offered in the community. St. Vincent's, Alpha Project. They'll help you find work if you're sincere about it.
Mm-hmm.
They'll help you clean up and get you back on your feet.
Showers?
Yeah, showers.
Lockers?
Yeah, laundry.
Now, this began, you say, in 05, and that's expanded. Is it a place to sleep at night as well?
Yes. There's a place that the tent is open every night, and St. Vincent's
Cooperative. Over, or is it
it's usually pretty full. There's a lot of people there. We estimated at the time when we started it that there was close to 8,000 to 10,000 homeless in San Diego,
okay,
scattered throughout the various boroughs,
mm-hmm,
and that's what we figured. We did a count, and we were losing count. But we kept finding them everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the what I call rubber tramps, the ones that live in their cars and everything, that a lot of those get missed. There's people that move around from place to place that aren't regularly using the services. But just in 2 weeks, we found out that there was 5,000 using the services that we provided at the Alpha Project, at the Neil Good Day Center. But we found out by having them sign in that there was at least 5,000 people.
Now, how is this funded, and who is it? Non-homeless people who run the thing in terms of getting the money?
Yeah, it's government donations mostly, and private donations. A lot of private donations,
mm-hmm,
and things like food and clothing and stuff like that come
open
from
24 hours or closes at night.
It closes at 5 o'clock at night. The Neil Good Day Center. And it opens at 8 in the morning. And that's where you can network, you can get on a computer, you can find out information.
What about the shelter? Can you come in late if you got a job?
Yes, the shelter is very flexible about their hours and everything. They don't tolerate drugs and alcohol, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they got a real low tolerance for that.
We don't allow any drinking, that's why you've got your tickets.
Yeah.
All right, then. Now, I know that in Los Angeles, though they had this decision and then subsequently the settlement, the Jones settlement, which really was kind of unfortunate because it removed the protection of the court decision from the entire 9-state area and simply made it applicable just to Los Angeles.
See, but that's what they're in the process of fighting right now. And San Diego, the 7 members of their city council were pro our program.
So there's a fight right now going on?
Yeah, it's still going on, but we're winning. We're gaining ground.
I think San Diego did a settlement before the Jones decision turned into the Jones settlement in Los Angeles.
Yeah, we did a I wasn't homeless then, but I was part of the program. And in 2001, they did a massive sleep-in on the courthouse steps and would not give it up. And if you got arrested, you showed passive resistance. Well, there was just too many bodies to take to jail, because as soon as you got arrested, mm-hmm. somebody else would slide into your slot, and we were scattered around there for a couple of blocks, the homeless
How long did it go on?
Oh, this went on for almost a month.
And yet it was not successful, right, in the sense?
Not at that time, but it brought awareness to the problem.
You were a part of that?
I was helping to coordinate. I had a van and I had a truck, and so I was moving bodies and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I didn't do any administration into it. But
they were
telling me. What's that?
Did you get arrested?
No, I never got arrested.
How many people got ticketed or arrested?
Oh, I would say close to 6,000.
And what happened to those tickets?
They squashed them. There was nothing they could do with those tickets. There was too many of them. There was no way they could waste all that time and energy to prosecute that many people. But it did open San Diego's eyes to the...
But it took the iron fist of the Federal Court of Appeals to get them to settle this spring, right?
Yes. Thank you.
Well, I know that the law they were using in San Diego, as I remember, was 647J, the state anti-lodging law.
Yeah.
And that, unfortunately, is what is now again being used in Los Angeles, because the court settlement may not cover it. The court settlement covered their local L.A. code about sitting, sleeping, or lying on the sidewalk. And now police are using 647J, claiming people are lying around or lodging around, and they're using that instead and going after homeless people.
That's why they're trying to use that time frame, especially in the wintertime when people pull into... like a business is closed and there's a doorway and it's cold outside, it's dark already.
Well, the same thing is true with L.A.
And then you get up and you be gone.
The time frame in L.A. is at night, where you're not supposed to be able to arrest homeless people at night for violating the sitting, sleeping, or lying law, but instead they're using the 647J code, which is essentially the same thing, although it's different words and it's a state code, not a city code.
Yeah, that's what I hear from an activist in Venice called Peggy Lee Kennedy, who's talked on my show a while ago.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because what's going on right now is the lawyers for
Spencer,
for our lawyers in San Diego, which I'm not familiar with their names. I never got.
I think Spencer is the lead plaintiff in your case in San Diego.
And they're working with L.A. now, uh-huh. because they've got enough precedence with each other's cases, you know, that and in San Diego right now, it's unspoken by the police. If you show them one of them cards, that's your past jail.
Right, showing this card in Santa Cruz, perhaps?
Yes, yeah.
What was the result?
The cop was befuddled. He didn't know what to do. He says, well, then there's going to be another shift coming on. I'll let you go. But he was befuddled.
Now, have you been sleeping out regularly in Santa Cruz?
Yes, I have.
And have you been in a fairly public place or concealed?
I sleep at the courthouse.
And who sleeps there with you?
A couple of my friends.
And does that happen? How long has that happened?
Well, we've been down there for almost a month now, and the only ones that have told us was one judge told us we couldn't be there.
Name of the judge?
He says he was a... Superior Court judge.
You know his name?
No, I can't.
Attic, Maraganda, Stevens.
I think it begins with an S. He's an older male, white male.
Yeah, most of them are.
Okay.
Stevens, probably.
And yes, and he told us that they patrol the area, and he told us in a very firm way. Well, he didn't know that the night before, two sheriffs had come up onto the place where we were sleeping and said, are you guys drinking here? And I says, there's nothing here. We're not drinking here. I have been drinking, but not here. I'm not going to front off the spot.
Right.
Then he goes ahead and tells us, he goes, hey, well, get out of here early. And they both walk away.
And that's what you've been doing every night?
Yep. That's what we've been doing every night.
Have police confronted you at any other time there, either city police or deputies?
No, but I've had city police confront me in other situations.
And with respect to sleeping or with respect to open containers?
Sleeping.
Tell me what happened about those incidents.
Okay, they walked up on me and told me that somebody had complained, which I don't ever believe that one. I think they were just on patrol and happened to flash on me. But it's always somebody had complained, and they told me to get up and roll up my gear, or they would cite me.
But no tickets?
No tickets. I've never.
How many times has this happened?
Oh, shoot. Since I've been in Santa Cruz and I've been homeless since March, I was in a program. I was in the Pioneer program. And as soon as I graduated from there, I went homeless. And I relapsed. And but since then, I'd say it probably happened anywhere from 8 to 10 times.
How would you like to be a plaintiff in our lawsuit?
Sure, if they don't get pissed. But they will get pissed, will they not?
Who?
The cops. I mean...
Well, they won't know until a couple months from now, first of all.
I'll do it.
Yeah. Well, then I'll send someone over with a clipboard. You got a point where you can be like a contact point?
Oops, looks like they may know now that we broadcast this account on the air, although we did say we were doing that. That's a concern of some folks, that people are going to be targeted for being part of the lawsuit. And though in Santa Cruz I've not been aware of any retaliation of that sort recently in that way, it has happened in other cities. It happened in Fresno, for instance. There is a concern that it happened in Fresno with Pam Kincaid, one of the lead plaintiffs in the Fresno decision where the courts ruled that you can't seize homeless property and destroy it the way our head ranger John Wallace regularly tears up tents and destroys homeless property here, capriciously, and one might even say maliciously.
That I had a felony conviction. I did 3 years in San Quentin, and I got out in 98.
What was it for?
Assault with a deadly weapon.
That was a while ago. That was 10 years ago.
Yeah.
You promised not to assault me if I have
a there you go. Okay.
Who needs a haircut?
I don't need a haircut.
Don't need a haircut.
We're talking with
Robert Hutchinson,
a.k.a.
Lone Wolf,
also known as
Laughing Dog,
and Hutch. Of course, that's what I was waiting for.
American Legion.
You're a vet, Hutch, and you've been for a number of, about a year and a half banned from the Veterans Hall?
Illegal restraining order by Tim Bratt and Richard Anderson, yes.
Right.
Totally illegal, and they lied.
Right.
And that's okay. I go in there anyhow, and I spent 51 days in a 90-day thing for violating that 6 times, which I violated it 30 times, and I went in there, and finally, now they don't do it. Tim says he'll call the police, and I said, call him. Here I am. You don't call him.
And you said recently you went to a meeting?
Yes. The American Legion and the VFW are in the process. They are protesting the Iraqi war. They're on top of it. Now, the members are talking to people in the community, and they're sending out newsletters protesting the Iraqi war for the money thing, you know, and it's wrong, morally. And DAV are temporarily under suspension right now, but they're still protesting, too, and sending out newsletters and talking to people on the streets.
Well, I know that
on
Saturday at noon, there's going to be a protest at the Capitola Recruiting Center down in Capitola.
Good idea.
Yeah, it'll be happening like in 3 days.
I missed the December the 1st thing, but Saturday I'll go to Capitola. I will not forget, because it's important to be there and listen and talk to people.
Now, Hutch, did you talk to the guys at the table about your sleeping situation? You gotten sleeping tickets?
I haven't gotten any sleeping tickets for about 2 months now. I've been woke up by the police about 4 times, and they said, we got a complaint. We're not going to write you a ticket, but please move down here. You can sleep over there. You can sleep over there, but you can't sleep here because these people call us and complain.
Now, where was it they were complaining?
I was down by the soccer field across by the railroad tracks.
On all occasions or on other?
No, on one occasion I was there. I was sleeping behind the St. Francis Kitchen at the field. Some guys came around and said, you can't sleep here. They weren't cops. I was also sleeping up on the hill behind the town clock, and park rangers came and said I couldn't sleep there, but they didn't write me a ticket.
Did any of these people give you a place where you could sleep specifically?
One officer last week said, yes, you can sleep by the Greek church. First alarm security. I was sleeping.
A Greek cop? I want to know the truth.
No, he was.
Did he speak Greek? Was it Greek to you?
He was the first alarm security. I was sleeping by the veterans building.
Yeah.
The bank there. He says, well, I said, where can I sleep? He said, by the Greek church over by the library.
Did you do that?
No.
probably a good idea. It would be private property. It would be illegal there, too.
Well, it was all traced out, and it was lights all around. And
I know they've actually changed the libraries. They've removed all the brush from around the central branch.
Well, people still can't see now, and I haven't been bothered.
So, what happened at the anything specific coming up? I know tomorrow night, which actually will be happening as this perhaps is being aired on Tuesday the 13th, there's going to be a debate between Tim Bratton and Ruben Gomez at the Veterans Hall.
Just someone to be there,
really?
Tim Bratton.
Yeah.
He is
be happening tomorrow at 7 o'clock to community, what do they call it, community TV.
And this, of course, happened about a week ago, and little update on Tim Bratton. You're going to hear a lot of criticism of him. I actually spoke with him on the phone today coincidentally because some food is being given away for distribution on the streets, and I was trying to help get it out. We were late in picking it up, and somebody else got it. But I happened to get a hold of him at the Vets Hall, and Tim insisted that Robert Hutchinson, the man speaking, had broken into the Vets Hall drunken and I think he said he destroyed property. And my question then was, well, was he arrested for, you know, any crimes? No, we just got a restraining order against him. So I invited him. I said, well, Tim, you know, this program, which you hear being talked about, the community TV show, he actually didn't show up on. But I understand his son was recovering from acute appendicitis, is what he told me. His son was in the hospital for a week after a ruptured appendix. And apparently is doing okay now. So I suggested to Tim that he could either call into this show or he could perhaps get back to community TV because there was a lot of criticism of his management of the Vets Hall, ranging from our own Skidmark Bob here at Free Radio to Hutch to Ruben Gomez to Roger, et cetera, vets, and other vets on the street. A lot of it concerns the second-class status that vets feel like they're having, with main focus being on money-making, yoga-istic activities, some people have claimed. He wanted to know what the criticisms were. I tried to give him some of them, but he was called away by other people who were asking for his assistance. I know that things have tightened up considerably. I mean, I guess I can't blame the disappearance of the payphone on him, but I understand he, although he didn't confirm this, was responsible for the pressure that eliminated the benches, the public benches in front of the Vets Hall on Front Street, supposedly because they attracted drunks or some such thing, not to mention disabled vets. So I would like to talk to Tim further, and I'm not an unbiased person here. I have a definite stance, so perhaps he can clarify some of these issues. His main point was he wanted this to be a positive approach to changing things. And what do all these critics have to say that could make things better? And I guess the main thing they want to do is get rid of him. Whether that would make things better, it depends on whether the new person would make the changes that he apparently, in the minds of some, has created a number of problems, and therefore they want him to go, as well as Pat Clark on the board of directors. But again, it'd be nice to have a debate here on Free Radio, perhaps, if not on community TV. I know it was attempted on community TV, but Tim Bratton wasn't able to make it. He notes he's been invited again. He may show up for that. That's my understanding. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norse. The show is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. The call-in number is 427-3772, 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz. Off air, you can reach me on the Huff line. That's for Homeless United, for Friendship and Freedom, 423-HUFF, H-U-F-F, 423-4833. I'm sometimes there, sometimes not, but I generally get back to people, though, usually a day or two late. And if you want to be on the show, let me know, because the subject matter here definitely is one which I'm interested in broad input on. You can also call in. Again, 427-3772 is the call-in number. And if you want to be a part of Free Radio Santa Cruz, the collective, and there are spaces available and show times available, you can get in touch with us online at freakradio.org is probably the best way to do it. And then you'll be given an application to fill out. You'll be asked to set up a tape, to send in a tape, to give us an example of what your show would be like. And then, of course, you'll be subject to the ritual humiliation and hazing, the hot boiling oil and the tar, which is necessary part of every No, just kidding. No, this free radio is available, so definitely, if you're interested in being a member of the collective, it's a possibility. Give a call. If you want to leave a message on the voicemail line, you can do that. That's not for my show specifically, but for this particular purpose, you have, you know, we'd like us to mail you an application that you may grow old waiting for an answer. Best way is to go online to get it. The message line is 427-4523. 427-4523. You can also give PSAs, public service announcements, if something, public events are coming up that you think we should know about, protest demonstrations, seminars, I don't know, things of public interest, you know, particularly things that concern, at least I would be interested in seeing human rights issues raised. And you know, since Congress, I guess it was it today or yesterday, voted, I guess it was yesterday, big surprise, voted to continue the war. Go for it, Georgie boy. We need some local anti-war action here, so let's get going, folks, and I'll get out there with you when you do it. Although I admit I wasn't at the Capitola event, and I hear it was an interesting event. You hear it mentioned here briefly on the tape, Raging Grannies and others last Saturday, I believe, at noon, showed up at the Capitola Recruiting Center. And I think they closed down the center in anticipation because they're afraid that the Raging Grannies might rage in and, you know, suggest that sending people overseas to murder civilians and train terrorists to murder civilians is not the best use of the public monies or a good tradition to get into when you're claiming to be defending your country and all that sort of thing. So you can find more information about that particular thing on Indie Media, that's Santa Cruz Indie Media, at IndieBay.org, IndieBay.org/Santa Cruz. And you can check out that. I've also been doing some writing for Indie Media, and I posted something today, actually. Actually, no, it hasn't been posted yet. I'm going to be posting it, I think, later tonight. And I guess you listening to this radio show will get the scoop, and I'll be doing that in a moment. It's a letter from Ryan Coonerty, mayor of Santa Cruz, to me, which showed up yesterday. But first, let's finish off the interviews, and then I'll be right back.
Yeah, we're community.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Tim Brett
is across.
Oh, I have to go. Ruben Gomez is one of my friends.
I will, too.
And you can be in the audience, and you can ask questions. So go there.
Okay.
Go there and check it out.
I would like to mention one thing about Tim Brett.
Go 6:30, 6:45, go in, you'll get a seat.
I was in jail on the violation of the restraining order, and they brought Tim Brett in for perjury on the stand against Jim Purcell. He's already done time for perjury, and the sheriff's told me he's gone down big time, Hutch.
Now, let me understand this. I know that Purcell is the other man who's gotten a restraining order against him via Bratton at the vet's hall. He's a vet, right?
Yes, he is. Marine.
I call him Leather Lungs Jim Purcell,
yeah,
if I remember.
I haven't seen Jim around.
I haven't seen him either. But you say that, now when you say that Bratton was accused of perjury, you mean he was, that comments were made about him, or he actually was there on a charge of that?
He perjured himself. I heard him perjure himself testifying against Jim Purcell in court.
And how did he perjure himself?
He lied and said he was breaking in just like he did me. I was breaking in and stealing stuff.
And what was the actual situation was?
The actual situation was we were in there one night and we were cleaning up the kitchen. And that was what we were doing, and we cooked a little food and gave it to some people, and that
was
it.
What do you vets mean by using the vet's hall to clean up and cook?
Well,
what's wrong with you? Get a clue. It's a yoga center, man.
Yes.
Get with the program.
It's Veterans Memorial Center. The state is on top of it right now, and they are...
It is not the one-stop yoga shop.
It is a Veterans Memorial building sanctioned by... This Congress.
It says on the front of the building, dedicated to those who served in war.
What's your name, Adam?
Doesn't matter.
Oh, a secret person.
Honor right. Those who served in war.
Everybody knows me, but I don't want to.
Right.
That's okay.
Right. But Tim Bratton perjured himself on my restraining order and also on Jim Purcell's. And he got put in jail on Thursday and posted bond on a Monday. Bail. And the sheriff's told me that he's going to go down hard for violating misappropriation of funds and renting spaces in the building and lying on restraining orders, which are illegal.
Don't forget tomorrow to go to the community TV studios at 6:45 and get in the audience.
I will be there.
Talking with Bob Patton, who's doing some activist work out here. Hi, Bob.
No, I just heard a report from a couple that was here, an elderly woman, maybe in her 70s or looked like she's even in her 80s, and her son, who's probably in his 40s or so, maybe even 50s, he has multiple back injuries, and HPHP, at least from what I can understand what he was saying, turned him away for service there at the home service center, saying they would service his mother but not him. So they both left and have not returned to it and would not return to it because of the treatment they got.
Huh. Do we know their names, or if they give their names? Or
did not want to go on an interview because they didn't want to be targeted or pinpointed.
I see. Okay, what?
Their car campers right now with both of them sleeping in the man's vehicle.
Well, we know, obviously, they're lying. Santa Cruz is a compassionate community, according to Mayor Coonerty.
I wouldn't believe him if somebody, I don't know why.
My goodness.
Well, what is Mayor Coonerty's latest statement on this issue? I don't know, but I did get a letter from him, which I'm going to read to you now. It's dated December 14th, and probably what I should do before I read this letter is read the letter to which this letter was a response. And that's a letter I actually posted on Indie Media, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, as I mentioned before. And I'll just go find that letter and read that first. And let's see what we got here. We do a protest every Sunday around the issue of the sleeping ban and the Coonerty collusion with the sleeping ban. He, of course, is the mayor, so he's the chief executive officer of the city in a certain sense, although in another, since we are a city manager and a weak mayor city, he doesn't have the power that, let's say, our city manager for life, Dick Wilson, has. And Dick Wilson, I guess, gets paid significantly more, too. Although the city council recently raised its salary. Dig it. You get to pay more for these city council members and this mayor. And where the heck is the latest on the, let's see, still looking for the letters here. Having trouble finding it. But I will. And there's no question about it. I am going to find it. So don't give up hope. Really, again, I suggest indiebay.org/Santa Cruz is a great resource, and one that it's not hard to, you can write your own stuff and put it online. You don't have to wait for other folks. Here's my letter to Mayor Coonerty. He actually wrote a letter. There's been an interesting exchange of letters. Back on December 1st, he wrote as of December 24th, I will no longer be an employee of the Bookshop Santa Cruz. This is Mayor Ryan Coonerty. I will no longer receive any salary, nor do I or will I have an ownership interest. You and Huff can decide, he's writing this letter to me, whether your protests still make sense. That's every Sunday at 2 o'clock in front of the Bookshop Santa Cruz. Come on down. I can say that bookshop sales have increased every Sunday over Sundays last year, in part because of your efforts. As someone who is interested in public policy, I would recommend, however, that you spend your time demonstrating that you have the political skills and legitimacy to make change. You could challenge the ban in court, put an initiative on the ballot, or move into the city and run for city council to advance your cause. My guess, however, is it is much easier to try to blackmail me through targeting family members and spouting empty rhetoric. All the best, Ryan Coonerty, Mayor of Santa Cruz. And my response to that was, Ryan, I wrote this on December 2nd, thanks for your quick response to Tim Rumford's article. And that's actually what the letter, I think, was a response to. Tim Rumford, who does a blog, humanityforhomeless.blogspot.org, wrote an article for the current Street Spirit newspaper, which you can find on the streets of Santa Cruz if you look hard enough. And if you really are looking for it, come to New Leaf Market Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday nights. And often there's copies of it available. Or you can come to the Huff meeting and get it there. Huff meets every Wednesday morning at the courthouse in the basement of the county building, actually, in the cafeteria there from 9:30 to 11:30, or you can try the public library. We're trying to make it available and elsewhere. I think Tim Rumford himself is trying to distribute Street Spirit. But he wrote an article in Street Spirit, which has also been posted online at IndieBay.org, in which he rather severely criticizes Mayor Coonerty. And I, of course, given my opinion of the mayor's behavior, which includes all kinds of small death of a thousand pricks, if you will, but really have to do with his very reactionary and homeless hostile position masquerading as a compassionate one, which is all the more hypocritical and kind of as the editor of Street Spirit, Terry Messman, puts it, repulsive. So anyway, this is my letter. Thanks for your quick response to Tim Rumford's article. I'd like to meet with you in the next week for 15 minutes to half an hour. When would that be convenient? As with Mayors Matthews, Rotkin, and Riley, I'll be taping our discussion for public broadcast on Free Radio Santa Cruz. And some of you may remember I do that with every mayor and usually have an hour-long or 45 minutes or half an hour interview. And it's a little rough for the mayor, but they usually dodge the questions. And then I criticize them and point out when they're dodging. But, you know, it's since they're the mayor, that's what they're expected to be able to respond to the public. And even though I don't agree with Matthews, Rotkin, and Riley, and in fact they're in their own way much more formidable opponents than Ryan Coonerty, they at least were willing to be recorded, make themselves to some extent accessible to myself and other homeless people. Not that they did diddly squat, and in fact they went in the other direction, but they were accessible and I wanted to give them at least that. Coonerty, however, has not been, although he's only been mayor for about a month. He's been vice mayor for a year, and he hasn't been particularly accessible. For instance, he's refused to meet with me or declined to meet with me throughout that time. Please advise me of your procedure, I write him, for scheduling meetings with members of the public so I can pass on that information to interested folks. So far, he's refused to do this. This is now a month, almost 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later. Huff will consider your thoughts at its next meeting. That is to say, should we stop protests because we're really helping the bookshop and instead we should just try some other political avenue and stop beating up on the bookstore because they're not responsible for Coonerty's bad policies, is one way of putting it. Our meetings, I invite him to come, are public and you are invited to attend Wednesday 9:30 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. in the American Cafe, the cafeteria in the basement of the county building at 701 Ocean Street. I don't need to remind you that cold winter weather is upon us. There is space for at most 160 people in the walk-in emergency shelter program, including the armory. If you don't believe me, contact Ken Cole or Paul Brindell to confirm these figures. Several nights ago, police and or rangers issued 17 tickets in one spot alone on the wharf, according to a working homeless man who got one of them. They were trying to sleep on the beach in a sheltered area. Even if one believes the figures cited in your mayoral speech at City Hall Tuesday, which do not match homeless census figures taken over the last decade, three-quarters of the homeless folks sleep outside and face criminalization. And that means, of course, that for sleeping, the mere act of sleeping after 11 o'clock at night, they face a $97 ticket. These issues need leadership, I write, and action before the council recesses for the winter. This is your opportunity to show it. Thanks, Robert Norse. And he didn't respond to this letter, so I had to write a second letter, which I'm having a little trouble finding, but actually it may not be that hard to find. Let's see. I found it earlier. Wow. Here we go. I wrote this letter. Ryan, on December 2nd, this was, I think, on December 12th, about a week ago, or a little more. I responded to your email on December 2nd. In my response, I requested A, a time to speak with you for an interview with Free Radio Santa Cruz, and B, your procedure for scheduling meetings with the public, specifically for those outside without phones who want to bring concerns to your attention. It's been 9 days and I've not heard from you. Since these issues in part concern winter shelter and police practices, the recent rains and deepening cold make this a serious and time-sensitive matter. I also want to thank you for making your email accountable by routing them to City Hall, those promoting greater transparency thus promoting greater transparency in office, unlike some previous mayors and current city council members. And what I mean by this is some council members get their emails at their home and then claim that you can't look at their old emails as city council members because it's personal, even though they are doing city business at home. Coonerty, to his credit, is not doing this. At least I believe he's not doing it. I think he was one of the people who changed that practice. I think he's also trying to run for higher office, though, so that may be part of the deal. I additionally request a copy of your schedule of public appearances or appearances before groups, as well as a record of the scheduled meetings you've had with members of the public in the past month, insofar as these meetings were in your capacity as mayor or city council member. And the point here is that the mayor may be meeting with lobbyists, and if he is, we want to know who they are. That's your right, because this is a public official. And the mayor is going to be meeting in public at various times. We have a right to know when he's going to appear in public. He's a public official. And the Sunshine Act, as I understand it, guarantees this. That's the California law. But neither Rotkin nor Matthews nor Riley have been willing to follow this law. And it looks like Coonerty is also stonewalling on this issue. At least he hasn't released his schedule of appearances for the next month or what he's been doing in the last few months with other lobbyists and other people he's met. As someone familiar with the Public Records Act and Sunshine Act, Coonerty is a lawyer, the only lawyer on the City Council, I'm sure you will respond to these requests in a timely manner. If you decline to meet with me, please clarify why this decision is being made and what criteria you are using so that others can know if they are also excluded. You are also invited to come on Free Radio Santa Cruz to discuss these and other issues to the public, so the public can hear both hear and participate. I know you have declined to do this in the past, but feel your position as mayor makes this opportunity an important one for both you and the community, given your interest in transparency and accountability. Thanks, Robert Norris. Well, in response to this, I got a letter the other day, and it reads as follows, December 14th. Dear Robert, this is in response to your email of December 12th, 2007. First, I will be happy to give you any and all information to which you are legally entitled. Of course, he doesn't give me any information in this letter, but it's nice to have that statement, I suppose. Second, you are welcome to communicate your concerns to me via email or phone messages. At this time, I will not meet with you in person as I have done in the past. My reasons for not meeting with you include the following. 1. Targeting the economic well-being of my non-elected family members and friends as a means of influencing my public policy decisions. He's talking about the demonstrations in front of the bookshop, which I call the Boycott Bigotry Campaign. Another Huff activist called the Banish Bigotry Campaign. Harassment and intimidation of city and bookshop Santa Cruz staff. That's city and bookshop Santa Cruz staff, harassment and intimidation, and 3, inappropriate comments to female members of city commissions and my family members. This is not meant to provoke a dialogue on the subject, he further writes. For any future questions about arranging a meeting, please refer to this letter. Well, this was the first I'd heard about any claims that I've intimidated or harassed, made inappropriate comments, although he has mentioned before that I've targeted the economic well-being of the bookshop. Although apparently, if, as he says, the bookshop is doing better on Sundays, I'm actually contributing to the economic well-being. Well, I responded to this letter today, and I'm going to read you that response. Assuming I can find it here. Let's see. Dear Ryan, thank you for your letter of December 14th. In it you note, at this time I will not meet with you in person as I have done in the past. My reasons for not meeting with you include the following. Harassment and intimidation of city and bookshop Santa Cruz staff. Unquote. Please provide any record whatsoever, including but not limited to notes, memos, journals, correspondence, complaints, requests for public assistance, records of 911 or interdepartmental calls, whether written, electronic, audio, videotaped, or anecdotal, re your claim of, quote, harassment and intimidation of city staff. And the point here is, he's making a claim that I'm going up to certain members of the city staff, people employed by the city, and harassing or intimidating them. So let's see the record. Let's see the proof. Let's see the complaints. In order to assist me in identifying the appropriate records of the alleged harassment and intimidation, please state in each case whether the alleged incidents are considered civil or criminal in nature. In other words, is he calling me a criminal, as well as claiming, without any stated evidence, that I'm harassing his staff or staff of the city in any way, city personnel, and for that matter, bookshop people, or for that matter, his friends or his family. He's making claims like this that are rather broad and rather vague, and frankly, they're rather damaging to my reputation. I mean, I've got a colorful reputation, but when the mayor of the city makes these claims under an official letterhead, it's a serious charge. And it's a serious matter. If he has some evidence, I'd like to see it, because I'm certainly not aware of any yet. Who knows? Maybe something I'm doing is being interpreted as intimidation or harassment, but I want to know what it is. I continue my letter. I would like the following information on each incident if it is not evident in the records sought. 1, the date and time of the incident. 2, the location, whether on public or private property. And 3, alleged subjects of harassment or intimidation. As regards any alleged criminal incident, please provide the names of any witnesses. Also specify to the best of your knowledge whether any criminal investigation has been initiated or completed. Thanks in advance for your assistance, Robert Norris. I want to really tip my hat to John Golder, who helped me prepare this letter. It's really an attempt to get public records, to get documents, to get to the truth of the matter, pretty much, to see what's happening here. And I will report to you whether Ryan responds to this request, and if he responds, what he responds with. I also sent him a second letter, because this really only has to do with one specific paragraph in his letter where he says that he's not going to be meeting with me because of my harassment and intimidation of city staff. Actually, city and bookshop Santa Cruz staff, but I'm just talking about the city staff. Because when you attempt to harass and intimidate city officials, that is something that really the mayor has a legitimate interest in as a mayor. It's part of his staff. I suppose that Ryan, as a bookshop Santa Cruz worker or family member, has an interest in, you know, protecting the safety, security, well-being, and so forth of his bookshop folks, and I can appreciate that. But insofar as he's the mayor and he's writing on the official mayoral stationery, I'm interested in this particular Public Records Act request I just read to you in getting the information about the claims that I'm harassing and intimidating city staff. I want to know what that's all about. It's a pretty serious charge to say that. And it can result in some people, for example, not wanting to meet with you, not wanting to do business with you, and so forth. And it's a rather personal charge, which actually suggests even criminal conduct. So, again, let's see what's cooking there. Now, as I said, I wrote a second letter because there's a lot more charges are made in Coonerty's letter. He's not just saying, I don't want to meet with you, go away, which would probably be a smarter thing for him to say. Instead, he's saying, I'm not going to meet with you because you're engaging in what seems to be criminal behavior, or at least behavior that could result in court action, or behavior that sounds like it has an actionable side. So I write him the second letter also, which I also send him today. Thank you for your letter of December 14th, which I just received yesterday. I am sending you under separate cover a Public Records Act request, I just read it, for specifics around your charges that I have harassed and intimidated city staff. I take it you will follow the law in forwarding the requisite documents within 10 days. We'll see about that. I note that you have declined to answer the questions I put to you in my letters of December 2nd and December 9th. I repeat these questions. 1, what is your procedure for scheduling meetings with the public, specifically for those outside without phones who want to bring concerns to your attention? 2, please supply a copy of your planned public appearances or appearances before groups between now and February 28th as far as you have scheduled them. And 3, please supply a copy of scheduled meetings with members of the public in the past month insofar as these meetings were in your capacity as mayor or city council member. You'll notice that while Coonerty said in his letter that he'll be happy to give me any and all information to which I am legally entitled, he gave me absolutely no information other than essentially blackening my character. Thank you for clarifying, I continue to write, why you will not meet with me. The criteria you are using, however, are not clear. Do they apply to others? Does this mean that you are also refusing to meet with other activists demonstrating in front of Bookshop Santa Cruz? They are also protesting your policy and that of your father, who is the author of the downtown ordinances. Neil is also another supporter of the city's sleeping van. That's Neil Coonerty, the supervisor, owner of the Bookshop Santa Cruz, and Ryan Coonerty's father and former mayor. And, as you have described him, the owner, along with your sister, of the bookshop. I have not received any complaints either from city staff, city commissioners, your family members, or members of the Bookshop Santa Cruz of harassment and intimidation or inappropriate comments. To the best of my knowledge, our protest has been careful not to single out individuals other than responsible politicians like yourself and your father. Please be more specific about these complaints and clarify whether they extend to other members of the protest. If you are accusing people of inappropriate or criminal behavior, you owe it to them, not to mention the community, to clarify exactly what you're talking about. I would also suggest that there are more suitable avenues for addressing the basic issues than halting dialogue on the sleeping van. That affects the health and well-being of over 1,500 people outside. I can understand you're being upset that I am urging the community to vote with its dollars. I think your refusal to engage in a healthy dialogue at a time of year when such a dialogue is most significant does little to endear you to potential customers and voters, and indeed may cut into your Christmas profits. Your suggestion to me during the Community Voices from the Village live show that activists should spend tens of thousands of dollars running for public office in a year or attempt the equally expensive task of putting an initiative on the ballot is neither feasible nor timely. Homeless should not have to wait 12 months to be able to sleep legally somewhere tonight. Your expanded police and ranger force has put increased pressure on homeless people outside, tents slashed, property seized, $95, it's actually $97, citations issued. Destroying homeless tents in the dead of winter in a shelter emergency is a human rights violation that can't wait on money and political caprice. I should think this would be obvious. You have never been open to a dialogue on the sleeping ban or other homeless issues, so it's no surprise to find you explicitly closing the door to this possibility. But it's disingenuous to suggest that the bookshop protest is a significant factor. Let's be honest. Your refusal to address the no shelter but instead tickets for sleeping position goes back years to the beginning of your term. It cruelly impacts poor and homeless people, many of them disabled vets. Our banish bigotry protest in front of your workshop was relatively recent and has actually been the only activity that seems to have attracted your attention. You might check out the homeless memorial for the dead coming up in a few days. And actually, that's happening tomorrow, I understand, at 10 o'clock in the morning out at the Homeless Service Center for those who want to hear the reading of the names of the dead this year. And there are quite a number of them. Your position is, in human rights terms, and I'm reading a letter to Mayor Ryan Coonerty, indefensible. Targeting me rather than addressing the issue is neither good city policy nor intellectually honest. Are homeless people and their advocates to be treated like pariahs until your business priorities or those of your family are satisfied? You have already banned peaceful activists from the bookshop, signing your ban letter, Vice Mayor. Now, as mayor, you exclude a member of the public from meeting with you because of a legitimate First Amendment protest against your business. Your harsh position will ultimately cost the city money from the general fund. The federal courts have directed cities with far larger and more powerful city attorney offices than yours, i.e. those in San Diego and Los Angeles, to comply with the elementary constitutional guarantees which Santa Cruz rejects. The Ninth Circuit Court found the sleeping ban their cruel and unusual punishment. Those cities are now paying financially for succumbing to pressure from conservative staffers and police officials. Can you not learn from their example? Further, I believe your letter is not merely an attempt to avoid a public issue to the profound disadvantage of both homeless residents and taxpayers who will end up paying for the lawsuit. It also seems an attempt to intimidate me through anonymous charges made by a powerful city official. You may not choose to have a dialogue with me, but please make good on your stated willingness to give any and all information, specifically answering the questions above, already raised in this and the two prior letters. Please clarify the specific complaints of, quote, intimidation and harassment and, quote, inappropriate behavior that have been made against me, or withdraw those charges publicly. There's actually a few typos in the letter, which I regret, but hey. There you go. That's my letter, second letter today that I sent out to Mayor Ryan Coonerty after he sent me a letter essentially saying, I won't meet with you because you have been harassing and intimidating City and Bookshop Santa Cruz staff and making inappropriate comments to female members of city commissions and his family. And again, this is the first I've heard of that, so maybe I'll hear more about it. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norse, and this is Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Call-in number is 427-3772. Don't be intimidated or harassed. Please call in.
My ears have heard the story, how they asked my cell phone plan.
When and who I have been calling.
Have I talked with Pakistan?
Did you know the NSA has got a friends and family plan? And you've been added on.
Glory, how they'll listen to ya. Who you call and how they knew ya.
How sex hotline girls would do ya,
or how long you stay on.
And now what if they are hearing just exactly what you say?
If they're listening to 900 calls, they ought to help you pay.
Soon they'll know your every fetish,
and they'll know Tom Cruise is gay.
I've wondered for so long.
They will know if on his birthday you don't call your Uncle Brent. They will know if you don't call that girl with whom the night you spent. Yes, the White House needs intelligence, but this ain't what we meant. They
got the whole thing wrong. Glory, glory, what a drama. They'll know if you call your mom.
That was from Springtime for Liberals called Glory NSA, or perhaps Glory Glory NSA. So again, calling number here is 427-3772 for any potential callers who want to slip in. Got 45 minutes left in the show, so there is time to check things out if you want to do that. I'm going to probably return to the street interviews as soon as I queue them up here. Actually, I do have a couple queued up. Maybe I'll just go directly to that and then come back with some news briefs, so to speak. Let's see. Well, let's go back to late November. Here are some interviews then that I wasn't able to play, but unfortunately they're still all pretty relevant.
So it's, around 10:15 on the 27th of November, beautiful Tuesday morning. I'm in front of Verizon Wireless. How exciting. Talking with
Terry.
Terry, you got a new sign, colorfully colored sign, misspelled for holidays. You're going to get it.
Is it misspelled?
Two L's is, unusual spelling.
Oh.
Happy holidays.
Holidays.
Holidays is good. Homeless and hungry, anything helps will accept food. Thank you and God bless. In need of winter supplies and clothing. And yet, you are surrounded by a backpack, a nice-looking wooden three backpacks, boy. And you have a coat and a hat and a sweatshirt on. What the heck do you need anyway?
Tarps and things so we stay dry during the wintertime.
Why don't you go to the armory and join the many teeming homeless masses that are there?
Would you like to smell 1,000 smelly feet every night? Or be subject to all the illness that is in that building? I think I would not like that.
You actually have tried it and found it wanting?
Yes. Quite a few times.
Anything else happening that we should know about downtown?
No, actually, the police, they don't even acknowledge us anymore. We say hi to them, and they kind of just stick their noses up at us because they're all mad about the sign on the ground thing.
That was apparently some research done by the city attorney based upon an inquiry from one of the more friendly hosts found that the police practice of ticketing you or telling you couldn't put your sign on the ground was, in fact, a violation of the First Amendment or some such thing.
Yeah, that was actually me and my brother pushed that towards our friend, which I won't say her name, but she's really nice to us and to all the homeless people, and she works for us.
What's her name?
I can't.
It's a secret. All right, we've been talking with
Terry.
Thanks, Terry. So we've also learned that the bathrooms across from New Leaf Market on Soquel, I guess it is, are now open until midnight instead of till 10. At least that's what the sign in front of them says. So I suppose that's City Council's way of saying we're not going to put in a 24-hour bathroom, but see, we'll give you 2 more hours to take a dump. If that's good, and that shows how cool we are. Sorry, 3 more hours. They did close at 9.
Well, so I've also got a report here, which I received from by email today, called Downtown Holiday Crackdown, from Tenderfoot Tim Rumford. He's the same Tim who recently wrote the article I mentioned about 20 minutes, half an hour ago, that appears in the current issue of Street Spirit, and also online at indiebay.org around the Santa Cruz sleeping ban and the latest struggles around that issue, which those of you who are regular listeners know all about. He writes, he headed downtown to give out a few jackets to those in need. As I drove from Laurel onto Pacific, I noticed cops everywhere. This is a 2:25 p.m. email from today. He's talking about today. Parked empty cars, 5 in total, between Laurel and Borders. In front of Logos, 3 officers were arresting a young homeless kid. I say kid, he must have been 20. He was sober-looking and putting up no fuss. He was in handcuffs. I rolled down the window and asked him, "What are you being charged with?" Officer Klein yelled at me to leave immediately. The young man said, "I don't know." As I got to the bench at Borders, now I've got to say, let's be full disclosure here, when the police arrest you for a warrant, they don't usually tell you what it's for, and perhaps they don't even know what it's for, because it's just the warrant itself that's arrested, and usually it means failure to appear on some misdemeanor or felony charge. In fact, I don't know what else it would mean. And often you don't know what that is for until you reach the jail. So the real question is, though, what are these people, what are the cops doing running around checking people for warrants out? Many people have warrants out on minor offenses, which they can do very easily in Santa Cruz, because when you are downtown, you are almost surely in violation of some ordinance, one way or another. That's not true if you're walking around shopping necessarily, but if you're sitting down, if you're trying to use the public spaces for other than transiting to and from stores, you may very well be in violation of an ordinance, which gives the officer the opportunity to demand who you are, to search you if he wants, because if he's arresting you, and that's a technical arrest, remember, if you're being written a citation, or just to intimidate you, to stop you, to talk to you. Most people are not aware that they can just say to the police officer, "Am I free to go?" and walk away, which is often the best approach, though my response is to pull out a tape recorder and start interviewing the police officer, which I think is an equally good response. Then they walk away. In any case, as I got to the bench at Borders, Tim continues to report in his email, a woman was being arrested. She was screaming and surrounded by several officers, at least 3. Several people, including tourists, were present, watching and looking shocked at what they saw. In front of the Santa Cruz coffee roaster, they were hauling someone else off. I only saw them put him in the car. I parked and brought out my jackets and headed to Borders. There, 3 young homeless were being moved along, and the arrested woman was gone. 3 officers were still there, but no reason was given. No complaint was issued, according to the witnesses. One man who was there for the whole thing said the kids were not doing anything, no music, not even panhandling, just resting. According to this man, who would not let me record him, said the officer, they did not want them hanging around, and they needed to leave. The cops waited as they gathered up their belongings. They were not in a mood to talk, the people who were told to leave. They were demoralized and pissed off. I asked if they were being moved along. They said they were being told to leave the mall. And what Tim may have meant by that is that there is an actual ordinance that if you are holding up if you have a display device, which is not the same thing as a sign, but it's like a container, like if you're soliciting money, or it's actually a table, even if you're not soliciting money, if you're a political tabler, or if you're a person, a street performer with a guitar case, then you're only allowed to be there for 1 hour if somebody demands you move along, and after the hour you have to move along, even if, for example, you're, picketing a store and you have a table set up outside there, you're not blocking the sidewalk, you're exercising First Amendment rights. It's clearly an unconstitutional law, but it hasn't been challenged. Attorneys are not willing to do that because they're afraid of what our Roberts Supreme Court might do, and not to mention the expense of getting there and the financial risks of taking such cases forward and the chances of not winning. I asked if they were being moved along. They said they were being told to leave the mall. I asked the witnesses if the officer, this is Tim's email, used the words move along or had mentioned a complaint. All said no. The officers refused to speak to me and were extremely abrasive. Even the tourists seemed in shock as they watched. The homeless I spoke to were scared, many depressed. I gave out 5 brand new $200 jackets donated from a few people who gave up Christmas gifts for clothes for the poor. I also saw a vet in a wheelchair being sighted or spoken to by an officer on Ocean on the way in. There was a lot of shopping going on, and what was happening was obvious. They targeted the worst looking. They gave no reasons. They just scared them away and arrested those with warrants or stay-away orders the night after a stabbing over asking for a blanket. And that, of course, you may have read in the Santa Cruz Sentinel on cops and courts. And I'm going to read that next. But I'll finish this thing for Tim. He foolishly did not have his camera. And thank you, Tim, for that. That's what he writes. I foolishly did not have my camera. Thanks for the update there. Appreciate that, Tim. And if anybody else has updates on what's going on downtown, please email them to... You can email them to me, rnorse3, R-N-O-R-S-E, number 3, at hotmail.com, or better still, post them on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz Indie Media. Google for Santa Cruz Indie Media and post the stuff there. That's the thing to do. Here we go. Homeless man attacked in Santa Cruz for asking for a blanket. And I think you may have seen this story. If you didn't, you get to hear about it now. Looks like I have to go to the website to get it, but I will. And the computer is churning away, and it's... there's an actual press log of Santa Cruz police cases. Let's see here. Interesting. Here's a series of cases about what's been happening downtown, or at least for the press log. I doubt this gives you all the cases. And unfortunately, it doesn't. This does not really tell us the actual story. I guess I'm going to have to go to the Sentinel website. But as I recall, and I read the story, an individual along Ocean was accosted by 4 individuals, he asked the individuals if he could have a blanket, and they ran after him with a knife and stabbed him. We have a caller. Let's see who's calling in. Hey there, caller. Welcome to Free Radio. What's your name?
Hi, Robert. This is John.
Hey, John. What's happening?
Get the media involved like you think about doing. Because I heard something today. It was rather interesting. I think it was Congressman Waxler, or Waxman. He said that they are not really going to bring Bush or Cheney up on impeachment charges because it they might lose, and it would look bad for the Democrats because the Fox News would create such an uproar with it. So they're afraid of the media. The people in power. So, you know, get the media out there, the Santa Cruz Sentinel or whoever, and get more people involved, and I think you'll get more people on your side.
Huh. No, it's always good to do that, and I encourage you and others to, we've got to really become the media, because, as you know, Fox News isn't going to listen to the two of us much.
Well, Fox News, yeah, anyway.
Right. Or the Sentinel, for that matter. But, yeah, I think it's a good suggestion. I mean, we need to create more media and get more people looking, taking pictures, writing stories, and I appreciate that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Phone lines are open, 427-3772, if you'd like to call in. Interested in phone calls, and you can do that if you'd like. And I think I actually have some more tape here that we can run while I get it all together. Let's see. Well, it looks like I'm at the moment reduced to doing what I was going to do on Sunday when I come back with the show. I do a long Sunday show from 9:30 in the morning to 1, and sometimes even longer. I went to the Measure K Commission. That's the commission that the voters passed that's supposed to oversee the police department and make sure that they're making marijuana enforcement. Now, this isn't medical marijuana. This is all marijuana enforcement, cultivation, sales, you name it, use, possession, the lowest enforcement priority, provided you are A, on private property, B, under 21, and I think it's C, not involved in the commission of another crime. That's the other one. And I've talked about this before. We have a crippled commission which has been hobbled by a combination of things, including, oh, I don't know, the very idea of the commission is a sort of, it's a publicity stunt to sort of prepare the state for a statewide initiative. This is how those who are putting it out described it, to a statewide initiative this next year to tax and regulate marijuana, which is a good idea. There's no question about it. And the commission is supposed to do is to sort of put, it's to show that at a local level, it can be the lowest enforcement priority. That police, and not only is it going to be the lowest enforcement priority because it says it shall be the lowest enforcement priority, but the police shall be required to document it. Well, police department here didn't like that idea. The city attorney didn't like that idea. They initially challenged it last summer. Then they wouldn't pass it as a measure at city council by four votes, which they could do. They wouldn't put it on the ballot, which they could also do by four votes for the voters to decide. They wouldn't endorse it once it was on the ballot and people had gathered 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 signatures of registered city voters. And then a spokesperson from the police department, Lieutenant Patty Sepulveda, she's Vice Chief Patty Sepulveda now, wrote part of the measure against it, the arguments against it. And when it passed, the city attorney persuaded the city council in closed session with no public discussion to sue the people who put this forward, to sue Theodora Carey and others, claiming that the measure was unconstitutional because it involved getting information from the police department about very specific things, looking over their reports. And this is a kind of an outrageous attack because it passed by 64% of the votes. It's been done in Oakland, Seattle, Santa Monica, and Santa Barbara. And the first claim I heard that the reason why Santa Cruz is different is, well, we're a charter city, which means that we have a very special firewall between the city managers and the police and the city council, and the police can't be directed to do anything by the city council, and this would be a commission appointed by the city council. Well, the reality is that the police department isn't directed to do anything. They're simply supposed to provide reports to the city, and it was passed by initiative. And this could be done through the city manager as well. But the police department and the city manager and the city council chose not to take this approach, but rather instead to eliminate the whole procedure, where making the whole commission a joke. So they have no way to look over the police reports to say, well, it looks like it is the lowest enforcement priority. Instead, they're supposed to take the police department's word for it. That is to say, Tina Scholl, who is the, I hope that's her last name, I hope I'm not mispronouncing Tina's name. She's the staff person who kind of seems to run the committee around and the commission around. She sort of acts like she runs the commission instead of vice versa, though she's supposed to be the staff person. She would be the person who would, I don't even think she would look at the reports, but she would simply take the reports from the police department. They would process the reports. I guess Zach Friend, who is the police PR man, actually showed up at this meeting on Wednesday night and said he would look through all the reports, and he found no instances in the last year of any police officers ever arresting anyone for marijuana use in private, which didn't involve either a minor or another crime. And we know this wasn't true because at the same actual meeting, and I was very surprised to see who brought this forth because I didn't expect it from Jim King, of all people. Jim King is one of the commissioners who won't even talk to me. He's very sour. He helped sabotage an attempt to get shelter space for the homeless back in 1997 when it was brought before the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. I believe that was part of what he did. He also was involved in sabotaging support for the Sleeping Ban Initiative at that time. Who knows? Maybe he had an honest disagreement. But according to Becky Johnson, who is an activist working with Huff, as well as she was a board member on the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, he was instrumental in helping to destroy that possible endorsement, which was an important one at that time. We were pushing to put the sleeping ban on the ballot at that time, and we didn't successfully do that then. Anyway, I'd had a bad history with him. I'd seen him seemingly hostile both to me personally and I think to expanded rights for poor people or restored rights for poor people. And so I was quite surprised when, well, you'll hear what happens in the beginning of this tape. I'm going to begin the tape. You're going to hear the beginning of the Measure K Commission. It went on for 2.5 hours. I got most of the tape. I paused the tape recorder when a member of the public wanted to use the bathrooms. The bathrooms, for some reason, have not been opened, and they stopped the meeting to let the person use the bathrooms. And indeed, this was a rare public commission meeting where they actually paid some attention to what the members in the audience wanted to do, and they included their reports, their verbal reports, in the annual report. Of course, the commission has a strange meeting schedule. They're allowed, the city council, which is hostile to the group, has said they're only going to be allowed to meet twice a year to give their reports, which will essentially be regurgitating what the police department gives them without even being able to monitor, oversee it, or check it out, and then perhaps to add to it independently criticisms that come to them from members of the public about how the police are acting. So anyway, let's listen to a little of the Measure K Commission. I'll be playing probably more of it on Sunday. And hopefully I'll have a better tape by then as well, because this is a tape which is a sort of an impromptu tape. Well, the tape recorder is a tiny tape recorder placed at the mic of the City Council chambers. But let's see how it goes.
Rural Communications. Yes, I have an oral communication. I'll go to the podium.
And this is Jim King, who is a commissioner on the Measure K Commission, which, again, additionally, the City Council has refused, well, individuals on the City Council, since members are appointed individually. They didn't appoint anybody at all until, I think it was May. They couldn't get a quorum until August or September, and there's still a seat open. Madrigal hasn't appointed his person. They have 6 members appointed. Unfortunately, Anita Henry, who's been on this show and who has been a person who has pressed hard to restore the part of the commission that was destroyed by this. I didn't really get around to mentioning this that I have in the past. The commission originally had the right to look over police reports, but that was removed by a court settlement done, as I said, without any real public discussion by attorney Ben Rice, and an agreement between Ben Rice and city attorney John Barisoni, or whoever was representing Barisoni's office in May, and it was done with as a stipulation before the court. City council couldn't change it because, you know, the community had to go past city council to get this done, because city council, for all its posturing about medical marijuana, isn't really interested in significant changes in the drug war or taking any risks to get this done at the possibility of offending the police department or conservative people who buy paranoid theories about the bad effects of marijuana compared with the great beneficent effects of alcohol and tobacco, which the city sells freely in and around town. So in May, the whole commission was essentially defanged. And there was also present at this meeting attorney Ben Rice, who agreed to come and talk about the issue. I had tried to reach him for free radio. He continued to be elusive, and it's hard to say whether he didn't really call me back until I finally reached him almost the day of the meeting, and I asked him a simple question which he never answered, which is, how is it that the Measure K Commission provision that the police shall provide records is somehow in violation of our city charter, but that the provision of the old Citizens Police Review Board that the police shall have to actually come and testify before the CPRB and that they have to provide a lot of records is not, or was not. In other words, why wasn't it raised way back then? If you can have a police review board, why can't you have a much weaker and much more limited Measure K Commission? And his response is, oh, I got to go. And he never answered that question, though he has said he will answer it. He gave me his card, and he smiled, and he said, call me up. So I'm going to continue to try to reach him, and hopefully we can get some answers to these questions, though I'm becoming increasingly skeptical. It was also disappointing. Anita Henry did not show up. Perhaps she was ill. She had emailed me the day before, or actually the morning before. And so instead of... there was a chair and a vice chair who were pretty concerned that the commission had been defanged. But there were also two, I would call, ringers appointed. That is to say, two women appointed by members who I think are hostile to the Citizens Police Review Board. To the Measure K Commission. One of them is, believe it or not, Candy Jackson. Candy Jackson is the woman who was part of the family that ran Jackson's Shoes downtown. She personally put forward a proposal that became the move-along law, the expansion of the forbidden zones in front of businesses where you're not allowed to sit, you're not allowed to peacefully spare change. And it was due to her initiative in 2002 that the city passed a whole series of repressive laws. And now she's come forward and was making complaints that the commission will be spending too much money asking the police to look at the records. And there was a similar... frankly, idiotic statement made by, Mary Lou Gecky? I think her name is another, what I consider to be internal saboteur appointee, who was saying, we don't want to ask questions about the people who are making complaints or pass that information on to the city council because it might violate their privacy. Of course, people coming to make complaints to the Measure K Commission are already making public statements, so that is pretty absurd to start with. But it just shows that the people are taking a conservative perspective and they're trying to, you know, be honest about their doubts and concerns. And I was castigated for raising my rather sharp tongue about this matter and essentially accusing these two members of being, as I said, ringers, people who were put on the commission to essentially sabotage it. Candy Jackson insisted that she voted for Measure K, but to me that doesn't mean anything. If you don't support Measure K, if instead you support gutting it on the commission, it doesn't matter what you voted for. It matters what you're doing. Anyway, it's a rather bad tape. We may not play much of it, and I'm hoping to get a good tape, if not by Sunday, then by next week, and we can listen to the Measure K cavalcade and think about it.
Sure. My name is Jim King, and the information that I have is that on June 10th of this year, approximately 4:15 p.m., a gentleman by the name of Dennis Holt was cited for the possession of marijuana on the property of the Calvary Episcopal Church. I understand that there were a number of Santa Cruz City police officers present, and I think that with a consideration for our to-be-discussed bylaws that state that we are to ensure the implementation of the ordinance, and that I also understand that Mr. Holt was an adult, not on public property, that this leaves open that raises the question that does he fall within the third exception to the implementation of the ordinance? That is, that there was another criminal matter that was he was involved with.
Now, what this means is it's kind of hard to cut through the gobbledygook here. Jim King is a lawyer, and it's a little obscure, but what he's saying is Dennis Holtz, who's a musician and a poet and who writes Quincunx, I think it's a rather arcane newsletter, which is available on the email, and you can hear Dennis playing down with the SAFE Performers, Society for Artistic Freedom and Expression, on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday nights, thereabouts, in front of New Leaf Market, sometimes on other nights. There's a sort of a 10 p.m. club that shows up there, though it's getting a lot of hassle from the police, and also from, it's got a lot of unfortunate, well, it's got drunks hanging out there too, which I don't like much, but as long as they behave themselves, hey, people got a right to drink. In any case, King is talking about Dennis Holtz, who got a ticket for essentially possession of marijuana, and he was jailed for that. He was I think he was convicted of that, or he pled to that. You'll hear more about it. And it was observed by a witness. You're going to hear the witness talking about that in a minute. And this was way back in June. And the reason this is significant is, A, it falls within the purview of the commission, which is, if police are not supposed to be going after people, it's supposed to be the lowest priority to go after somebody who is on private property, and the church was private property, over 21, he was over 21, and not engaging in any other criminal behavior. And that seems to, you know, Holtz fits all these conditions. And Jim King, to his credit, although the last meeting he was at, he seemed to be pretty disinterested in this kind of stuff, and he wanted people to, he didn't believe my reports. But he apparently got it directly from Dennis Holtz, and he also got a witness. And the witness was a rather, to my mind, credible, although pro-marijuana guy, Bert Glick, who's a local poet. And he actually attended the commission hearing, and you'll hear him speaking next. The point is, and again, the point is that not only is this, you know, an example of the police not following the lowest enforcement priority, and the law passed last November, so the police were told they were supposed to do this, and apparently they didn't do it in this case. Using four cops to go after Dennis Holtz, if his report is accurate, is not the lowest enforcement priority on Calvary Episcopal. I'm sorry. It's not the lowest enforcement priority. The police are not doing that. And more important, or perhaps as important, when Zach Friend came out with his report to the commission, which the commission ended up, part of their business was to put forward a six-month report as to, you know, were there any violations of the Measure K guidelines? Were the police actually making marijuana enforcement the lowest priority? Zach Friend, claimed that this incident did not appear there. He said there were zero incidents that involved any kind of Measure K stuff, and therefore we don't have to show you any reports, and therefore there's nothing to report, and therefore you're wasting our money, and they're wasting our time. He went through a long spiel about this at the end of the meeting. But obviously, there's a conflict here, because Dennis Holt's case seems to indicate that the police department, at least in this case, did enforce, and it couldn't be the lowest enforcement priority. You don't send out four cops, unless I guess we got four cops too many on the police department, which we probably do, insofar as the kinds of jobs they're being assigned to do. If Tenderfoot Tim Rumford's earlier email, which I read about cops harassing people on Pacific Avenue is any indication. So, Zach Friend sat in the audience, by the way, throughout this whole time, and then he gave a long speech at the end. Friend is the police department, I like to call him the police department Goebbels, although I'm sure he wouldn't like that phrase, and it's not really fair. I mean, Goebbels was a... I got to say that Nazi Germany and Berlin were in 1938 were more totalitarian than Santa Cruz in 2007. However, the kind of spin that Zach Friend puts on things and his inaccessibility and refusal to address concerns about that and provide information, which I noticed in the case of the Homies for the Homeless protest. That's the protest at City Hall where there were... homeless people took over the City Hall grass during the evening and set up campsites because the city would not provide legal places for people to go. And they provided safe and legal places for people to be. Well, they weren't legal. They were safe, though. And people, there were like 30 or 40 people a night for six nights. And then Sentinel wrote a relatively favorable story about this. And the next night, the police came and gave away four tickets and drove people away, and Zach Friend then gave a nasty, what sounded to me like a slanted story, claiming all kinds of criminal behavior had taken place, feces smeared on the walls of bathrooms, drug use, harassment of city employees. Maybe I was harassing a city employee there and didn't even know it. And I sent for the public records, because not one citation was issued during that week in August when the Homies did their protest for any kind of criminal behavior. There were six citations for sleeping. I don't consider sleeping criminal behavior, but if you consider it criminal behavior, fine, but those were the only citations issued, sleeping outside when these folks had no other place to sleep. So Zach Friend is no friend to the community in terms of objective reporting, I don't think, or at least certainly in terms of any progressive legislation. He supports a certain position in the police department, it seems like to me. And I know when I tried to get more information from him, I was not terribly successful. And I'm still working on getting information around what happened that week. But that's a whole different story. So anyway, here's more from the Measure K Commission. And you're tuned to Free Radio in case... anyone just tuned in, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris, and this is the last 15 minutes of Bathrop's Pier's Broadside, Civil Rights, Where Are They, in Santa Cruz. And your phone calls, where are they? Come on, call in if you want, 427-3772. If you got stuff to report, now's the time to report it.
And there's also a witness to the incident present here tonight. Mr. Bert Quick. I was witness that there was no other third matter, and that the four or five police officers were involved in this.
And by third matter, what Bert Glick means is there was no other crime happening, and nothing else was cited. That's one of the things that would make it not within the ambit of the Measure K Commission, not within their charge, if it was some other crime involved. And then, we also found some marijuana, you know.
And I told them that it was a waste of my tax money.
So were you there through the whole thing?
Pretty much, yes.
Maybe give us a blow-by-blow?
Okay. I walked on the scene while Mr. Holt was smoking a bowl full of marijuana on the church property, and a police officer rode up, and Mr. Holt verbally asserted what he considered to be his rights, but was in no way physically assertive, and the police officer felt it necessary to call for backup, which I thought was totally inappropriate. And four or five officers appeared on the scene and cited him for the marijuana smoking.
As far as you know, that was the only thing?
Oh, yes. And so I just saw no other thing.
Here, what's the
your communications first, and then maybe we can talk about it.
Right.
Because not only does they just talk, and then you can do that.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next presentations.
I'm sorry. I'm Mr. Chair. I'm sorry I didn't do this. Do you want me to be keeping a timeline on the presentations?
And what was happening here is I was going to make a public comment on what had just happened. And at that point, Tina, the staff member, interrupted and said, oh, I'd better turn on the timer, meaning let's time you and make sure you don't speak for more than 3 minutes, even though the oral communication period actually started previously, and she didn't apply that standard to Mr. King, who is a commissioner, or to his guest, or to the person he invited up there, which in a way I would have said, sure, that's fine, except that it seems specifically designed, and I don't want to sound paranoid here, to limit my speech time. And she was quite vigilant about that.
I'm honored. First of all, I want to thank Commissioner King for bringing this forward. Mr. Holt also spoke with me. He discussed the issue on my show about 4 months ago, a radio show I do. I've got two other cases of this kind of situation. Craig Canada, who had his marijuana seized in front of Pizza My Heart. He was in Pizza My Heart at the time, so he was drawn by the police out onto the sidewalk. I don't want to say this is a pure episode, because it was the third exceptional condition may apply. There was another incident. He actually called the police because he was assaulted himself. He was, however, arrested for a battery. He's a homeless man who uses medical marijuana regularly and has provoked some controversy because he smokes in public, although legally, on Pacific Avenue on occasion to medicate. Another individual who spoke to me 2 days ago, Brian Parquette, who was held in jail, reports his marijuana was taken. He's been trailed by police officers. Again, these are... I've got to give you the details to find out exactly where this happened. I don't have the exact location of this, but I think it's a matter of some concern, and I'm glad it's being brought up. And I think it should be brought up in a specific segment of this agenda in the future, assuming you have regular meetings that are regularly accessible. So all of communications might be a time for general comment, but this is, I think, it should be a specific segment on the agenda for this. I suggest...
And this was really a key issue at this meeting, although... Since the commission will be meeting so infrequently, unless they are able to successfully challenge the absurd meeting schedule set up by the city council, which clearly is designed to, it's probably designed to save money, but it's designed to ignore the real charge of the commission, which is to oversee what's going on. I suggested that there be a grievance time specifically set in the agenda for people to come in and give grievances that isn't just oral communications, because oral communications can be on a number of subjects around the charge of the Measure K Commission, only one of which is to report grievances. And they didn't do this. The commission, it actually had the longest meeting in its history, which extended half an hour longer than the 2 hours that they were designated, and it must have been Tina either went to sleep or became very engrossed in this or forgot. I'm not sure, because normally she's very picky about getting out of chambers in the right in time, although perhaps because there was no one else coming in, it wasn't that important. Tina's the staff member who, as you can tell, I'm unhappy with the way this commission is staffed, but I mean... Frankly, I probably would be skeptical of any staff member who also works closely with the police department at the same time claiming to be an impartial staff member working with somebody who's supposed to oversee the police department.
Clearly, Tina can do this, but any member of the commission can make a Public Records Act request about any of this stuff. Just go down to the police department, and unless there's some reason, unless there's an ongoing investigation or it's a juvenile case or some kind of sex matter, they're required to give you the police reports on these issues, as I understand it, if the cases are closed. Now, you may have some problems with that, because they're jealous of their records on occasion, but it's worth pursuing. I note there's nothing on the agenda concerning the issue of the plight of homeless people who are faced with this problem. Dennis has often been homeless himself, Dennis Holt. So is Craig Canada. And in a certain sense, you know, you might say this is outside the purview of your commission because we're talking about public property. But homeless people have no place but on public property. And this commission, I imagine, can recommend to City Council or to the community generally that these issues be expanded, particularly to the most vulnerable homeless people who want to use marijuana, certainly better than alcohol, you know, in a private fashion, but in fact are targeted by police. Thank you.
And I made the same point at a previous meeting and suggested it be put on the agenda, but no one did. And I perhaps have not played as close enough attention to the commission members as I should. I actually got a friendly reception from one of them who came out of the bookshop Santa Cruz, the vice chair. And I've been getting the occasional email from Anita Henry, who, again, inexplicably did not show up at this Measure K commission meeting. And so her seat was empty, and there were some votes which, well, they might have gone another way with her active participation and discussion. More might have been exposed had she been there, but I can't say what's happened. Perhaps we'll hear from her at some point. I'm going to be talking more about this issue in the next part of this Measure K Commission meeting, which involved a presentation by Ben Rice explaining why he, as I would might put it, sold out the Measure K, the fundamental part of Measure K, which says let's be able to see the police reports and judge for ourselves whether the cops are, in fact, making marijuana enforcement the lowest priority. And the reason that's an important thing is because many years ago, Berkeley passed a resolution, I think first in 73 and then in 79, that marijuana enforcement should be the lowest priority, but the police ignored it. And there was no sanction provided and no real oversight provided. Well, this was an attempt to do that. Plus, this is also an attempt to recognize what's really needed is a change in state law, because it's the state that results in the criminalization of marijuana. You might say, well, the feds do it for medical marijuana, and they do. They swoop in occasionally. But the massive anti-drug war, or she was anti-marijuana, the prohibition that goes on, the marijuana prohibition war, is carried on by the courts on the state level. Bob Lee, jails are filled with people who are busted for drugs. And admittedly, I don't know how many of them are in there for marijuana and how many for other drugs, but it's all, frankly, a bunch of bullshit. And everybody who, I think it is informed opinion generally, and I suppose there are dissenters whom I might respect, but informed opinion generally, I think, is the drug war is a complete failure that corrupts what it touches, wastes everyone's time, destroys lives, shreds the Constitution, and doesn't even need to be discussed. It needs to be eliminated. And we have to work at it locally, not waiting for Ron Paul or Dennis Kucinich, you know, or somebody else to do it. We have to talk about it with respect to people being tortured, not over in Guantanamo, but in our own jails, who are being harassed in our own courthouses, who are being dragged out of their sleeping bags here in Santa Cruz in the dead of night. That is what we have to look at, because that's what we have some power over. That is the reality in Santa Cruz. And I'm kind of running to the end of the show, so I think we're gonna pretty much leave it there. I'll end here's something that happened on the freeway that I noticed as I was going out of town. I stopped to record this.
Almost 12 o'clock. We're in front of Best Western Inn, and we're watching two police officers apparently writing citations to two guys in handcuffs at the little turnoff that goes to Highway 1 South near the bus stop area. And these are Santa Cruz police officers. And actually, one guy is in handcuffs. The other guy is not in handcuffs. Both of them are bearded, long-haired people looking kind of,
certainly informal. I might say shabby. Clothes look like they don't fit them too well. Here's a sign back from some kind of a sign one of them has with a backpack. And one of them is signing a citation. Actually, it's not clear whether the second person is handcuffed. He may just have his hands behind his back. One of them is a community service officer, and the other, both of the officers have dark glasses on. They're chatting amiably as they get written citations, which I always find kind of amusing.
All your buddies are both off at all.
And so,
come on.
And we'll. We'll see what actually is going down here in a moment. This is an area that there's not much side traffic or people on pedestrian traffic, though. Cars pass by here regularly on their way south on Highway 1. It's the turnoff. Some cars are going on 17 over the hill or up to Scotts Valley. Others are going down south on Highway 1. And beautiful sunny day. Today, of course, is the 28th of November, Wednesday, and I just came from a Huff meeting.
Paca.
No, Paca, how long have you been doing this? Well, you know, it's for free radio, actually.
I've been on the job. I started with Santa Cruz PD in July.
And how do you like the work?
It's good, working with the community.
Now, has there been an influx of CSOs? I mean, have you got kind of a whole new class of folks coming in? Or?
We just started a new parks unit. So there's a whole bunch of CSOs coming in. There's
a lot of your time
CSOs.
Is up in the Poganip. And...
Right now we're mostly patrolling the city parks. Poganip we'll get to eventually.
And what are the major problems you find as you patrol the city parks? What kind of difficulties do you run into?
You know, I would say that you probably should talk to the Santa Cruz PD spokesperson, Zach Friend, and he'll have the information.
You don't want to say at this time.
I do not.
Because I know you were just giving a citation here. I see it all seemed pretty friendly. But... So how'd it go? Pretty good. What was the ticket for?
Panhandling.
And what was the specific code section that they gave you a panhandling ticket under? Did they say there was a complaint, or did they just pull you over?
And they just called me over.
So, let's see, panhandling within 15, 14 feet of a crosswalk, 9.10030. Where were you standing?
Oh, right in the middle of the road there. I should have gotten this.
So if you could actually go 14 feet down from the crosswalk, you're okay.
I guess so.
At least according to this particular ordinance, although I've never seen this ordinance used to ticket people at this location. They use other ordinances, but not this one. What about your fellow associate?
That was not my associate. We had no connection whatsoever.
Did he get a ticket too, though, it looks
like? I believe so. I believe he did as well.
You know, for the same thing?
I'm guessing so. I think he was over here or something. I don't know. They just said to come over and stand next to him, so I'm assuming they nabbed him up from somewhere.
Did they give you a legal place you could go?
What do you mean, to take care of the ticket?
No, to be able to exercise your First Amendment rights to let the community know you're looking for some funding.
No.
They didn't. No. Well, the First Amendment doesn't seem to mean a lot in Santa Cruz around those issues these days.
No, it does not.
What's your name?
William.
William, I think we've talked before.
We have.
And you were downtown. Did you get driven out of the downtown area for doing this?
Yes, I did.
And what kind of an excuse did they use to do that?
They said something about displaying items or something. I don't.
What items were you supposedly
books.
Displaying?
Books.
You were displaying books.
Yes.
Okay. So, you weren't displaying books today.
That one I completely understand because I was taking up a good section of the walkway on Pacific, but this I wasn't. This was actually, I can understand their reasoning behind it because it is dangerous, I suppose.
Really? Did you cause any accidents while you were here?
No, I did not. And, you know, I'm not an idiot. I'm not going to go diving in front of cars and stuff like that.
Traditionally, people are panhandled from the medians and from the sides of entrances to freeways.
Well, that makes sense, you know. And I was just overhearing what he was saying is, I guess, on that off-ramp, where is it? Right over there. He said that the tickets are more if you're caught panhandling on the off-ramp rather than if you're caught panhandling down here.
Well,
I don't quite understand that.
If you get approached again by an officer, ask them, where is it legal for me to panhandle, officer? I mean, surely there's a First Amendment that allows me to ask for money somewhere.
Yep.
And if he says he doesn't know, note his name and badge number. What was the name of the officer who gave you the ticket? Did you notice? We can check the citation again. These are two CSOs who apparently are part of the new group that are, you know, are getting into this.
Yeah, he was young.
Looks like Officer KW, badge 440. KW isn't too clear. And you didn't have any conversation with the other fellow who was being ticketed?
No.
I must say, neither of you were handcuffed. You just were given citation.
Exactly, yes. We were told that, or I was told, I can't speak for him, but I was told that you can either work it off or pay the fine. And he said he didn't even know how much the fine was. Or he really had no information whatsoever, to tell you the truth, on even...
Well, we will leave that poor fellow by the side of the road. Here you go, Robert. There's your tape. And that concludes Bathrobe Spears Broadsides for tonight. Unfortunately, he will be back on Sunday. In case you like that stuff, I mean, you know, these are tales from the sordid side of Santa Cruz. Yes. In case, you know, you want to explore all the arrests and pot busts and... I don't know. Anyway. Good night, Robert. I am Uncle Dennis. You are listening to my show now. Called From the Cream to the Dregs, and we're going to explore the music of the 60s and 70s, rock and roll, right on up to 11 o'clock. We do take a break around 9 o'clock for the Earth First Update environmental news, and then back to the music right after the news. So stay tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 or streaming live on the web at www.freakradio.org. Since it's called From the Cream to the Dregs, why don't we just start off with some cream?
Just beginning. I kindness in the hard ground. Has a mustache. You come into me with that soulful look on your face. You come in looking like you never ever done one wrong thing.
Gone by, if I could catch a dancing eye, it was